From the book of Matthew, chapter 2. It only seems 5 minutes ago, doesn't it, that we were celebrating Christmas Day, some 10 days ago? And here we are now in this passage this morning. The birth of Jesus has happened, and the wise men have come to worship, and in what seems like no time at all, the baby Jesus is having to be whisked away for his safety. And it reminds me, as we worship here freely today, how many people there are in the world today who are doing what we do, but they're doing it in fear of their lives. They're doing it in secret. They have to do it very quietly because of persecution and worse. And so, as I read this passage and as I read it preparing for today, it just filled me with gratitude, the freedom that we have to worship as we do. Matthew chapter 2. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star that they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. I pray that God might give us understanding as we read his word together, and also that he'll bless Deb as she leads our thoughts on this passage.
Thank you, Mark.
Good morning, everyone, and hello to everyone on Zoom. So here we are at the end of the Christmas season. These Advent candles, which we lit back in November for the first time, have burned down. We've started to remove the decorations, the windowsills, and after this service, we are going to take the lights down and strip our beautiful tree, putting it out for recycling, I might add. We have celebrated and we have feasted and we have now stepped into a new year. And here we are at the end of the Christmas story, the closing of the account of Jesus' birth. with the very familiar story of the Magi travelling from the east to search for and worship Jesus. So before we pack Christmas away, let's spend a few moments marvelling at this incredible event. This passage that Malcolm has just read is for me one of the most exciting, bizarre, strange, supernatural events in the whole Bible. So let's try and set aside the image of three kings kneeling in the stable and backtrack a little bit. If you want to follow through in your Bibles, I'm going to sort of work my way through. So Mary has given birth to Jesus in Bethlehem, probably about 4 BC, which we know because this Herod died in, did I say 4? Jesus was born in 6 BC because Herod died in 4 BC. Mary and Joseph, as per their custom, had been up to Jerusalem to present Jesus at the temple, and then it appears they chose to settle in Bethlehem to raise the child. Meanwhile, a large caravan of elite emissaries was on its way. The Magi were a priestly caste from Persia, possibly followers of Zoroaster, whose recent famous follower was Freddie Mercury. And the Magi were leading figures of the religious court in Persia. There were several elements to their work. There was the astrological scientific work they did in studying the stars. There was diplomacy. They were seen to be very wise. And they had a religious role in the form of magical incantations. And around that time, people groups east of Palestine had developed the study of stars and the sky and the planets into a really fine art, to the point where they believed that everything was interconnected. So anything that was happening on Earth was reflected in stars in the sky, and anything that was happening in the skies was reflected in events on the Earth. They were pagans, they were Gentiles, they were not God-fearers. But they would have been familiar with the Hebrew God because hundreds of years before, the Jewish people had gone into exile into Babylon, and a group of Jews had stayed, and there were pockets of Jewish expertise in Persia. So it's highly likely the Magi were familiar with the Hebrew God Yahweh. So these Magi studied the sky intensely. Did anyone see the moon last night? It was amazing. And even this morning, it was still absolutely beautiful, the wolf moon. And this is what these men, we assume, we don't know actually. We don't know they're men, but the Magi studied the sky intently. And then a star rose. What was it? We don't know, and we will probably never know for sure. It almost certainly wasn't Halley's Comet, because that appeared in 11 or 12 BC, which was too early. Some people think it was a supernova, a star exploding, which causes temporary, extraordinarily bright light in the sky. Some theologians believe the star was an angel, possibly the same angel that appeared to Mary and Joseph and the shepherds. But the most likely theory is that this bright light in the sky was a conjunction of the planets Saturn and Jupiter. Jupiter was also really bright in the sky last night. And this conjunction of these two planets occurred three times in the year 7 BC. And it's thought that this conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter happened in the area of the sky of Pisces. And in those times, Jupiter was known to be the planet which represented royalty. Saturn represented the Jewish nation, and Pisces represented Palestine. So the Magi noticing the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn in Pisces would interpret this as a Jewish king being born in Palestine. And what they do next, I think, is quite remarkable. They don't just say, oh, look, there's a king that's been born in Palestine. They get ready to go and visit this king. And I'm not entirely sure why, apart from the fact they were compelled to go. It's estimated that they would have walked about 900 miles from Babylon to present-day Iraq, to Bethlehem. And that's like us walking from here to Prague, or here to Seville, or here to Salzburg, according to Google Maps, or Land's End to John O'Groats, which might be more helpful for us to imagine. It's quite a long way. And we don't know how long it took them, but I expect they were really pleased to arrive in Jerusalem at King Herod's palace, where they fully expected to find the new king. But he's not there. King Herod would have been well aware of the prophecies of a Messiah, but Herod was not a true Jewish king. He had been appointed by the Romans, and he knew full well that he was not the rightful heir to the Davidic kingdom. It said he lived in fear of forces coming from the east, joining with forces of the true Jews within Israel, to oust him. So we can only imagine how he felt when this group of very elaborate-looking magi from the east turned up to ask where the new Jewish king was. So going through to verses 3 to verse 6, we see that Herod was not happy. He was disturbed. He was a really ruthless king. He had a really bad reputation, which probably the magi didn't know about, living so far away. He was quite murderous. He had 10 wives and many, many children, but he certainly had one of his wives executed and two of her sons. So not only was Herod disturbed, but it says the whole of Jerusalem was disturbed. Possibly they were a bit worried about what this trigger-happy king was going to do when he got upset next, and were they in trouble? But it's more likely that this reference to Jerusalem refers to the religious elite in Jerusalem, who had become quite comfortable cozying up to this imposter king and the Romans, and they didn't really want anything to rock the boat. So Herod questions his hastily gathered group of advisers, but notice he didn't ask them where the king of the Jews was to be born, which is what the Magi had asked him. He asked them where was the Messiah, the Christ, to be born. And the answer comes from the prophecy from Micah 5, verse 2. This account of the visit to the Magi is only recorded in Matthew of the Gospels, and we know that Matthew was really keen for his readers to understand that the birth and life of Jesus fulfilled Old Testament prophecy. And there are many references in this account to prophecy, which I haven't got time to talk about today. So he calls them together, says, okay, it's in Bethlehem, we think you need to go. Come back and tell me when you found him. He's got no reason to believe the Magi aren't going to come back to him. Notice he doesn't send military escorts with them, probably because that might have aroused a little bit of suspicion in Bethlehem. But don't you think the Magi might have thought it a little bit odd that the current king of the Jews doesn't know where his successor has been born? But off they went to Bethlehem, still under the guidance of the star, and they reached their destination. They found where the family was living, and they saw Jesus with Mary. And they worshipped him. The word used here is reserved for the worship of deity. They didn't just pay homage to a human king, they worshipped him. They presented the gifts they carried from their homeland, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Some people associate prophetic meaning to these gifts, but it's quite likely they were just the correct gifts that you would give a king at the time, showing how much the Magi revered him. And no doubt they would have been really useful to the family in their upcoming flight to Egypt. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. It would have been so much safer for the Magi to go back to Herod. This dream must have really cemented their view that this baby, this child, was not just a human king. They would have learnt by now about Herod's ruthless reputation from the people of Bethlehem. We don't know if the dream came to one of them or to many of them, but they believed it. They knew that this dream was significant. They knew that they must not go back to Herod. They went home. They returned to their country by another route. Any other route that they took from Bethlehem to Babylon would have gone through Herod's province. As Peter said last week about the flight to Egypt, you had to travel through Herod's authority. So I would have thought they were fairly conspicuous, this large group of people from another country. They knew that they were endangered by not following Herod's command to go back. But by now they knew that the astronomical phenomena they'd witnessed heralded the arrival of Messiah, Christ, King of the Jews, Emmanuel. I wonder what happened to them next. I'd love to know. I wonder what they told the people when they got back home. But we don't know. We'll never know that. So that's Christmas done for another year. We've sung the carols and we've read the Bible accounts of Jesus' birth. But can this really familiar story make any difference to our lives today in 2026? Just a few very short points. First, these magi were compelled to find Jesus. They didn't actually know where they were going. They didn't really know what they were looking for. They didn't have all the answers. But they took what the God they didn't yet believe in gave them, and they went. They followed. You could say they obeyed. And their curiosity, their search, their desire was ultimately fulfilled in that house in Bethlehem. But they hadn't been able to plan their route. As we start this new year, many of us might feel that we lack direction. As a church, we're looking for a new minister, and we don't yet know who this person is. We don't know the conclusion to our search. I think that's okay. God calls us to use what he's given us as we need it and to follow his lead. So let's just continue to pray for wisdom, for guidance, and boldness to follow him. Similarly, if you don't yet know Jesus, you will find him if you're looking for him. The Bible promises if you seek him, he will be found by you. So if you're not sure where you are in your faith, keep going. He's not going to hide from you. He will be found by you. Secondly, Jesus really is for everyone, as we've alluded to in communion. This account cements the universal significance of Jesus. Pagans came from a faraway country and they needed to know too. The very first people who referred to Jesus as King of the Jews were Gentiles from a country far away from Israel who followed practices that Yahweh had forbidden for his people. Through the wonder of creation, God yells the news that his son has been born. One of the books I read when I was preparing for this says, God's use of their astrological and cultural background to communicate with them does not imply his endorsement of astrology, but indicates his care in meeting people where they are. And finally, and probably most importantly, the ever-present truth that God was in control. Baby Jesus, in whom the fullness of the deity lives in bodily form, was born King of the Jews, the Messiah, the Christ, the ruler and shepherd of God's people on earth. But he was found by the Magi as a small child, with no royal courtiers, no military guard, no palace or army. In this story, we see the ambition, the strength, the ruthlessness and strategy of Herod and the religious leadership are set in contrast with the vulnerability of a child. God is in control. His hand is on every event in the story of Christmas. In today's passage, we see the devious plan of one of the most powerful figures in the ancient world was thwarted by innocent magi as they heeded a miraculous warning in a dream. We live in a world where powerful leaders seem to be able to do whatever they want. They plan, they occupy territory belonging to others, they start wars, they overthrow countries who oppose them, often causing untold suffering. We despair, we yearn for justice, and sometimes we live in fear. But God still is in control. At the end of Jesus' life, Pilate's soldiers are the first Gentiles since the Magi to call him King of the Jews. They crown him with a ring of thorns and place him on his throne, the cross. Instead of a bright star, darkness falls. And a single Gentile voice confirms, surely this man was the Son of God. So it won't be long till we enter Lent and celebrate Easter. Nelly, our cleaner, was asking me the other day, well, what's next after Christmas? What can I decorate the church for? I said, well, it's Easter. Easter, when Jesus rose triumphant from death, reminding us the most powerful figures in this world, and not even death itself, can hold back God's power. So this year, let's fully surrender ourselves to the God who is in control of all things. Let's sign up again to be his followers, to be apprentices of Jesus Christ, born as a baby in Bethlehem, now, today, reigning in heaven, until he returns to earth again. Amen. We're going to